Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this podcast, we highlight people's stories. We celebrate your successes, and together, we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peter Santoscano. Welcome to Episode 5 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Monday, October 24th, 2016. Hello there. You have caught me celebrating a success story. Did you hear that Canada is on its way to cleaning up greenhouse gas pollution? Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced that Canada will establish a nationwide carbon tax starting in 2018, a little more than a year from now. Back in episode 2, I featured Kathy Orlando from Sudbury, Ontario. She has been working hard with other volunteer lobbyists to get this policy change in place. We'll check in with her later in the show and see what she has to say about it. We also hear your puzzler answers, and I share a new puzzler question. In the Art House, you will meet Marvin Bloom and hear his unique take on climate denial. And speaking of denial, our main section today dives into climate skepticism to explore what might be behind it, where is it happening, and how can we respond. So, here we go. Today we are talking about denial. No, not that river in Egypt. Instead, we dive into the hot topic of climate denial. My hope is that we will consider it from some fresh angles. I also will raise questions. I invite you to consider these questions and respond. Back in 2013, when I first became alarmed about climate change, I researched how comedians tackled the issue. At that time, and even still today, humorists on stage, TV, and in print have directed pretty much all of their comic craft towards the politicians and everyday citizens who express skepticism about global warming and its causes. Comics and many climate activists refer to these skeptics as climate deniers, or simply deniers. For nearly 10 years, we have witnessed a stream of comedy and commentary that sets out to mock and shame climate skeptics, painting them with a single broad brushstroke. The message climate activists have communicated is, those people are a bunch of ignorant idiots who are too stupid and uneducated to see what is right in front of their eyes. I sat with these messages. Comics and climate activists sounded frustrated. They sounded downright angry at climate skeptics, angry that some skeptics actively sought to discredit scientists and distract or even deceive the public. So I've begun to talk to people about denial. I've spoken to climate advocates in North America, Nigeria, Chile, China, and beyond. Turns out, climate skepticism is a very North American thing, particularly in the USA. In speaking to people around the world, I ask, what does climate denial look like in your country? Over and over, I hear answers like, oh, no one here denies the reality of climate change or its causes. They may not know everything they need to know about it, but no, there's no climate denial movement in my country. While there have been public figures in Australia, Canada, and the UK who have denied or questioned the reality of climate change, for the most part, climate skepticism is something that happens mostly in the USA. The Yale Program on Climate Communication has done extensive and ongoing research into how people living in the USA respond to climate change. They break the country into 6 different categories, spanning from people who are alarmed about climate change to those who are doubtful or dismissive. As of March 2016, they identified that 10% of the U.S. population dismisses the reality of climate change. These folks are very sure it is not happening and are actively involved as opponents of a national effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. There is another group that is not actively denying the reality of global warming, but they are doubtful. They represent 11% of the U.S. population. In my conversations with people engaged in climate advocacy, I recently spoke with Angel Collinson, a 26-year-old professional skier who lives in Salt Lake City, Utah. When Angel is not skiing down glaciers and ridiculously high and steep snowy mountains, She speaks out to the public and politicians about the need to do all we can to address climate change. As part of the Protect Our Winters organization, she, along with others passionate about winter sports, advocate for climate change. I asked Angel about climate denial and her experience in connecting with lawmakers.
Yeah, I actually had a really interesting experience with climate denial. Protect Our Winters was visiting Washington, D.C. It was right before the Clean Power Plan was going through the works and getting approved. So we were meeting with certain key senators and legislators to say, hey, we support this and we support you. Please vote for climate, support the Clean Power Plan. So while we're trying to get in with these different senators, I didn't know who Bernie Sanders was at the time, but we were supposed to meet with him. He was busy and we ran into him in the hall. And he's like, oh, hey guys, how's it going? He was so personable. I was like, this guy's amazing. We asked him what we should do with people whose stance was that climate change wasn't happening. And he had a really interesting response. He was like, everyone in Washington knows that it's a real thing. There's no one that actually thinks that it's not happening. It's all just politics and, you know, different obligations and money, but no one actually believes that it's not happening. And I was like, whoa, that totally changes it for me.
No surprise. Some people have a public stance and a very different private stance. When a citizen or a politician comes out as being concerned about climate change, it can have a negative effect. Lawmakers can face a primary challenge in the next election cycle and lose their seat. I asked Angel how Bernie Sanders' insights changed what she does as a climate advocate.
I love this quote that you can't change opinion with fact. And so no matter how much you're going to be throwing facts out at people who say they don't believe in climate change, I think what's more important is finding ground that we agree on and not getting distracted. You know, finding things like pollution or, for example, the air in Salt Lake City. Every single person in Salt Lake City says the air is horrible. We need to do something about it. And the common solution, you know, we all need to get behind. And so I think it's, yeah, finding causes that we can all agree on is a really good place to start. And I think that the more energy we put towards climate denial, the more it's kind of going to ruffle feathers and keep it going.
On the Citizens Climate Radio Facebook page, I asked folks about climate denial. Faithful listener Chris Weingard shared some of his thoughts about the topic. He reminded me that when talking about climate change, Dr. Catherine Hayhoe, who we featured in our show last month, prefers to use the word dismissal instead of denial. It may be a more honest term, and it is a more neutral term. Climate denier or denier has become an insult and shuts down a conversation with someone who is skeptical. Chris goes on to explain that climate denial doesn't necessarily mean that people are anti-science. He wrote, quote, Senator James Inhofe once famously declared that at first he was okay with climate science until he heard a price tag. In other words, it was the finances of the issue, not the science, that bothered him. Chris then goes on to say, for some people it goes deeper. Climate change raises spiritual and psychological challenges. Quote, in this vein, some climate science dismissers are acting out their religious convictions. They have a deep feeling that God has promised that the human race is safe from natural disaster. We can respond to dismissal with reams of science data, but it may have no effect. For many, the key to this syndrome lies in diagnosing the actual underlying convictions or psychological blocks which prevent the science from reaching the conscious mind. We can start by being civil and reasonable and refusing to criticize or confront or mock. But reaching everyone is not possible. I'm grateful Chris wrote about this because I think at first I put all climate skeptics into the same camp, but turns out there are multiple reasons why people are dismissive of climate science and the evidence they see around them. This idea of the psychological blocks is one that should not be overlooked. With climate change, we experience a great deal of fear and shame. Brain-based research reveals that when we experience either fear or shame, or the mix of both, it creates problems in our thinking. Neural pathways begin to shut down, and we lose our ability to think clearly. It is fight or flight. Literally, our brains shut down. There is another factor we need to consider when talking about climate dismissal. That is the power of marketing. We live in a society that is drenched in advertising and public relations. We are constantly lobbied to buy this toothpaste or use that deodorant. Similarly, we are bombarded by well-organized campaigns to buy into certain ways of thinking and seeing the world. Not that it's all bad. We have anti-bullying campaigns, healthy eating ads, and well-financed efforts to help us be more active in our lifestyles. The idea that we should be skeptical of climate science and climate action did not come out of thin air. There have been organizations, companies, and individuals who have intentionally inserted doubt into the conversation. Now, we've seen this before. The U.S. tobacco industry hid the fact that their product caused harm. Through a variety of spokespeople, they undermined the conversation by saying the jury's still out on the dangers of cigarette smoking. Something like this seems to be happening with greenhouse gases. We are beginning to see that in the U.S., the government and energy companies have been aware of the risks of fossil fuel pollution for decades. There have been PR campaigns designed to deceive the public and stockholders. And like many such campaigns, lots, not all, but lots of people have bought the product. Andres Forno, a climate advocate in the South American country of Chile, shared with me some of his thoughts. He is an interesting guy because as an engineer, he actually began his career working for fossil fuel companies. So I asked about climate denial in Chile.
During the last 20 years, some parts of the north are becoming drier and drier. So the desertification is a fact. Nobody denies that. The lack of water is also a fact. The climate is changing. People can see clearly that the climate is changing. No, in Chile, I have not encountered climate deniers, because climate deniers are clearly people that lies over and over, so a little lie can stick on the ears of people, but they are financed by someone. I don't know who, but in Chile they don't have people, they are not paying people to lie, and so we don't have that problem.
I mentioned to you the Yale program on climate communication and the six different responses for Americans. While some people are doubtful or dismissive, many more people are alarmed and concerned. In a recent Citizens Climate International call, Bessie Swartz from Yale explained the numbers. And wow, was I encouraged and challenged.
There's really one number of all these that I like the most, that gives me the most hope. That number is 29 million. We estimate there are 29 million alarmed Americans. People who think climate change is definitely happening are very concerned about it and want to take action to do something about it. About 12% today. And these alarmed Americans are in every county, 3,000 plus across the country. We have seen first those numbers go up, belief in climate change, thinking that it's human caused, concern about it, first within Democrats, then amongst independents, and then most recently in the last 2 years, there's been a huge surge amongst Republican Americans believing that climate change is happening.
There are so many people concerned and alarmed about climate change, and it's growing. This encourages me, but it also challenges me. So much of the conversation around climate change for the past 5 to 8 years has centered on denial. Every climate speaker I have heard has felt the need to yet again convince us that climate change is really happening. So many of us go to these talks looking for the silver bullet that once and for all will convince or silence the people in our lives who dismiss climate change or the severity of the problem upon us. My question is, though, what about the 29 million Americans who are alarmed? How do we get them engaged? Fear can paralyze us, but action is the antidote to despair. Instead of using our limited energy to persuade doubters to believe, why not use that energy to educate the concerned and alarmed? Then together, seek solutions. Work together to convince lawmakers and the public that there are many people who vote who care about this issue. I want to end this discussion with some questions and a story. Earlier this year, I heard Elizabeth Colbert speak. She's the author of the book, The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. It is a brilliant and disturbing look at a massive die-off of species around the world. Humans have played a major role in these extinctions, including pollution, which has led to climate change. She started her talk by warning us that she did not come with solutions. She simply would lay out the seriousness of the extinctions happening all around the world. She was faithful to her word. And by the end of the talk, I felt terrible, overwhelmed, and so sad. By nature, I am optimistic. I believe in people coming together and finding solutions. In fact, I think a lot about the future and wonder, what does success look like? What does a more stable, just, and healthy planet look like? So I asked Elizabeth Culbert a question, a what-if question. What if, 10 years ago, everyone agreed that climate change was happening and human pollution was the primary cause? What if there was no climate denial these past 10 years? What would we be talking about? And what would you be writing about? Well, the floodgates opened. And then suddenly, she had solutions. So many of them, so many ideas of how we could address our climate problems. I think our brains have been hacked. In a time of so much fear and uncertainty, it can be hard to always think clearly. We are people who care about climate change, but it seems that most people in our world simply don't want to hear about it. Add to that, we've been distracted and disrupted by all the doubt that gets pumped into the discussion. We can feel negative reactions when we speak. Oh, please, that's too depressing. Climate change, no, it's a hoax. Or perhaps, for me, worst of all, silence. A blank response. In a recent article, Yale climate communication experts revealed that there is a spiral of silence around climate change in America. People concerned with the issue are not talking to their friends, family, and coworkers about it. They do not post about it on Facebook. They don't tweet about it. The people who know us and trust us often do not hear about this issue from us. Knowing some of you, of course, I realize you do speak out regularly. Thank you for that. It makes a huge difference when we connect with the people who trust us and when we share with them our concerns about climate change along with solutions. Now, there is much more to say about denial. I could not possibly have covered every angle in this episode. My hope is that in looking at it from multiple angles, we can begin to free our minds and begin to imagine a world without denial, a world where most everyone is concerned and engaged. Please share with me your thoughts about climate dismissal. You could email me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. Now it's time for the Art House. Today I introduce Marvin Bloom, a comic creation of sorts. Marvin is a climate advocate, but he has some unique ways of looking at the world. In this monologue, he tries to make sense of climate denial. Hi everyone, my name is Marvin Bloom. How are you? I'm from the Long Island chapter of the Citizens Climate Brigade that my partner Tristan dragged me into. Lots of people wonder about their friends, co-workers, and family who are climate skeptics, or the awful term, deniers. Ugh. Tristan has his own theories about this, but for me, it confuses me. I mean, you have 97% of scientists who say that the climate is growing unstable and human pollution is the cause. That's like saying cigarette smoking doesn't cause cancer. Yeah, tell it to your lungs. But I've been thinking about denial, all kinds of denial. Now, whenever I hear someone adamantly denying the reality of global warming, I remember Kubler-Ross. Yeah, you know, the people who identified the five stages of grief. I don't know if Kubler-Ross is one person or five or whatever, but they say that when something big happens to us, like a loved one gets diagnosed with something awful, or we find out we won't retire on time or graduate on time, or, I don't know, Lady Gaga comes out normal, we may go through stages of grief. It's not the only model for looking at grief, but it makes sense to me. We need these stages to process the loss until we can get to the place where we accept the reality of what is happening in our lives. According to Kubler-Ross, what's the first stage of grief? Denial. Denial. We're like, no, Ma can't be sick. She's never been sick a day in her life. She's too big to fail. We fight against it and deny the possibility that something so terrible is happening to us. Denial is a way we react to a potential big change in our lives. So here's what I think about these people who are so intensely denying the reality of global warming. They are literally freaking out because they know in their heart of hearts, in their guts, that if climate change is real, well, it changes everything. So it can't be real. And I don't like it when people mock people who are struggling to accept the reality of climate change, because at their core, I feel that genuine climate skeptics grasp just how dire the situation is, but their minds and hearts rebel against the reality. But I truly believe that after all the denial, they're going to quickly work through the other stages of grief. The anger, bargaining, depression. Yeah, it's going to get messy. Until they come to a place of acceptance. Not accepting that it's the end of the world, but accepting that we have a huge problem and we need to be involved in the solutions. And think about it. Suddenly, when all that negative energy they put into their denial gets redirected and harnessed to make a difference. To me, there is something honest about the climate denier, emotionally honest, even when they get their facts all screwy. Oh, and listen, they're not the only types of denier out there. Most of us are some sort of denier or working through our grief about our planet, which is seriously sick. But there is one type of denier I have no patience for. The hope deniers. They're like, no, we've gone too far. We can't do anything about global warming. And that's exactly what they do. Nothing. Well, except terrify people. And there's another group of people who are often called climate deniers, but that's the wrong term for them. They are people who know all about climate change, probably agree with the science, yet for years they have organized and funded campaigns to deceive the public. To me, these people are not climate deniers. They're outright liars, and nobody likes it when someone lies to us. But if I'm honest, and why can't I be honest with you, right? I, too, am in denial. Well, I don't suffer from climate change denial syndrome. I wish the whole thing were a hoax, though. No, I'm alarmed about global warming. You know, to be honest with you, I am skeptical about something completely different. I am a cholesterol denier. Yeah, I don't believe cholesterol exists. It's just a health scare manufactured by those grant-hungry American Heart Association doctors and those Quaker Oats people. Now, my partner Tristan says I'm wrong about this, and I'm refusing to make any changes in my life, but you know, he has his own healthy agenda that he's trying to shove down my throat. But that's another story. Thanks, Marvin, for that insight. I hope you don't remain dismissive of cholesterol for much longer. No judgment here. I can relate to ignoring the obvious when it means I need to change something in my life. If you have an idea for the Art House, feel free to contact me. radio@citizensclimate.org. Now it's time for our puzzler. But before I share your answers and a new puzzler question, I can't think of a more appropriate moment to bring Kathy Orlando back on the show. A Canadian from Sudbury, Ontario, Kathy was on the show back in episode 2. Since then, something amazing has happened in her country. The federal government decided to place a fee on carbon dioxide for all of the provinces. The fee will rise every year to $50 per ton by 2022. This idea did not come out of thin air. Citizens voted a pro-climate government into office. And for years, volunteers lobbied lawmakers directly and on the airwaves to bring this solution to their attention. I asked Kathy Orlando what she feels her part in all of this has been and the role of Citizens Climate Canada.
So I know we've written and published at least 1,333 newspaper items about us or by us. Before election, the last election last year in the 41st Parliament, our members met with federal members of Parliament, at least 99 of them, numerous times. And there's 360 of them. It is phenomenal. If you're speaking truth and you're doing it with kindness and love in your heart, you know, you stick to the high ground, you will make change. And the politicians need our help. It's like the Wizard of Oz. It's very different behind that curtain. So, yeah, they need our help, truly. I really believe that.
That is good news and great advice that fits perfectly with last month's puzzler. At our puzzler last month, you were at an event with folks concerned about climate change and the environment. There you met Margaret. And after explaining to Margaret how you connect with lawmakers and offer climate solutions with the goal to change policy, Margaret rolled her eyes at you, then said, "Oh, please, those bozos, they can't even rename a post office without shutting down the government. There is no way they are going to get anywhere with something as big and bold as climate policy. Why even bother?" Well, I got a lot of answers. Here are two of the many responses I received. First, Jennifer A. Hunsinger, a licensed professional counselor who was concerned about climate, weighed in.
"I'm thinking that it absolutely matters that we initiate dialogue with lawmakers, even if they don't give the response that we want. First of all, coming from contextual therapy theory, what is important is the attempt at dialogue, not the other person's response. The attempt increases our self-esteem and is the way to earn constructive entitlement. As our efforts to start conversations and contact lawmakers are how we can earn merit, which is what we need to do when we're dealing with our injuries on a changing planet. Second of all, if no one said anything under the assumption that lawmakers don't care or are inadequate, no one literally would know anyone cares about the climate crisis, let alone that it exists. There would be no voice at all. And then it's more likely that lawmakers wouldn't consider taking action because no one or not enough people are interested or care."
Now this question, if we don't talk to lawmakers, who will? Well, this comes up in a response I received from Ricky Bradley, who is Citizens Climate Information Technology Director.
"If you aren't in their meeting with them, who do you think are the people who are in their meeting with them? It's industry. It's their party. It's other folks who are in there influencing them from the oil and gas industry. It's only the fact that they were in there and trying to make a difference. That's the only way that's going to change. So maybe I'm still young, fresh, and into this movement and idealistic about it. But I know that if we're not in there talking to them, that they're definitely not going to hear from us."
Thank you, Jennifer, Ricky, and all the other people who responded to last month's puzzler. So, you ready for our new puzzler? It comes from listener Chris Weingard from Citizens Climate Chapter in Richmond, Virginia. "When I blog on climate change or go to public hearings on it, I often hear or read fossil fuel defenders say that shifting to renewable energy is unrealistic because low-income people are dependent on low energy prices. The cheapness of fossil fuel is all that keeps certain people alive. And Chris is right, poor and working class people cannot easily afford buying expensive energy efficient hybrid cars and installing solar panels and the other alternatives currently on offer. So how might you respond to the argument that shifting to renewable energy is unrealistic because low-income people are dependent on low-energy prices? Send me your answers. Leave your name, contact information, and where you are from. Get back to me by November 15, 2016. You can email your answers to radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. You can also text me or leave a voice memo of 3 minutes or less at 570-483-8194, +1 if calling from outside the U.S. That number again, 570-483-8194. Thank you for listening to today's show. Be sure to share Citizens Climate Radio with your friends. Just look for Citizens Climate Radio on iTunes, Podbean, and Stitcher Radio. We also have a Facebook group, facebook.com/group/Citizens Climate Radio. The show is written and produced by me, Peterson Toscano. We had audio technical assistance from Chris Pellucci from MediaVolution, other technical support from Ricky Bradley, social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Mortorano and Steve Alk, moral support from Madeline Pera. All the music we use on the show is licensed unless otherwise specified. Special music for the Art House segment includes One Suite from the free 1920s collection on archive.org. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to our guests. An easy way to share the show is to get a link to it over at ccl.podbean.com. On the right, you will see Citizens Climate Radio listed under categories. That's ccl.podbean.com. Bean, like Mr. Bean. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.